Tonight on The Download, comedian and Conan sidekick Andy Richter, Chicago hip-hop artist G Herbo, and we reload this week's news with Amara Enya and Mario Smith. Now, here's your host, a man who thinks he cut off all the tags on his new suit, Justin Kaufman.
A lot of tags on a suit. I did not know that. Buying a new suit, it's been my big purchase this week. It'll be my big purchase of 2017. There are 48 tags. I bought a new suit, and we talked about this, and a new shirt, a Ryan Seacrest special at the old Macy's. And I was wearing it for a wedding that was this week, and I have my cousin's wedding in Nashville coming up here. And I realized that I did not have, besides those two events, I didn't have anything to wear. But today, I was asked by Joel Weissman and the crew at Channel 11 to do Chicago Week in Review, which is on opposite another night of dominating local media. This really the anything after 7 o'clock dominated, right? Between that and 9 o'clock, right? After 9 o'clock, the big dogs come in. But for that very small window, local TV is mine tonight. I am a guest on Joel Weissman's Chicago Week in Review, and I wore my suit, and it looks good. And I will not lie to you. I'm looking at it with a little fear and a little sweat on my brow, being like, I hope there's not a tag showing. But as I look at myself talk, very handsome on TV, very handsome television star. It looks good so far. I can't vouch for the dress shirt or the pants or the shoes. They still may have tags, but we'll see. Anyway, how about that, huh? It's like Inception. You get Kaufman on the radio, Kaufman on the television. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Very excited to talk about the Bears-Packers. I'm not excited. Very emotional about it. Last night was one of the more embarrassing moments to be a Chicago Bears fan. Again, we get to the point where it's just very difficult to stomach. It's funny, we talk about, you know, the NFL ratings are down. Well, I can understand why they're down in Chicago, because we're getting to that point, that saturation point once again, where there are better things to do with our weekends than watch the product that's on the field at Soldier Field, or in this case, Lambeau. We'll talk with Adam Hogue about what we saw and what we should see coming up for the rest of the season. Also tonight, Andy Richter, the longtime late-night comedian, co-host, announcer, sidekick to Conan O'Brien, will be in studio tonight after the 7:30 news to talk about he's going to be in town with his wife for a podcast at the Chicago Podcast Festival, Crybabies. I'm so excited to talk with Andy Richter, one of my heroes in the way that when I was a kid at Columbia College, I knew that he had gone to Columbia College, and watching him on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, I mean, that was an experience for a whole generation. That was like the college show to watch at that time. In the 90s, mid-90s, I would race home and get done with my job at the Hokin making sandwiches. I would bust in and be like, put Conan on to watch some goofy sketch that they would put on with him and Conan and Smigel. So Andy Richter in studio, we'll talk with him coming up here. Also tonight, we'll reload this week's news. What's the biggest stories? Overreported, underreported, winners, losers? What took you down the rabbit hole? What story is going to be remembered from this week? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'd like you to chime in on what you think. And then also tonight, G Herbo joins us. This will be the third time G Herbo has been on this program. I love it. Kid who came up in the drill scene on Chicago South Side. I mean, really, truly, some of his early music was startling to listen to and to watch the videos to see sort of street culture in Chicago and Terrortown, South Shore. And G Herbo has risen the ranks, and he just put out his album Humble Beast and is getting some tremendous buzz. It's going to chart at the top 20, I saw today. Like, I mean, this is a bona fide hip-hop star in the making, the 21-year-old. G Herbo, once Little Herb. I think his full name is Herbert Wright. Get in studio with what some are saying is the Street Bible, his debut album, Humble Bee. So we'll talk about that coming up at 9:30. So lots to do tonight. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier. Also, traffic. When I say traffic, I was going to say with Esmeralda. Roger Badish, it's Friday nights. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. Let's take a break, and what we'll do, we'll get Adam Hogue on the line, and we'll start this puppy up. It's 720 WGN. Stay with us.
Second and 15. Terrible pass is picked off by Clinton Dix. And he's dragged down by Leno at the 40. That was nowhere near a Bear receiver.
Welcome back to Download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, I got to be honest. I'm not sure that I'm emotionally ready to talk about last night's Packer-Bear game. One of the worst, and they keep getting worse. I don't know what's wrong with the Chicago Bears. Adam Hogue joins me, as he does after every game, to talk football. This is really not our Monday evening quarterback. It's our Friday evening quarterback. Adam Hogue, of course, covers the Bears for WGN Radio, wgnradio.com/Bears. Great piece about Trubisky up today. Adam, how am I supposed to feel here? I just feel, as a fan, dejected and demoralized.
Well, I don't blame you, and I don't blame fans for feeling angry. It's tough to explain to your fan base that you keep trotting out a quarterback that now has 8 turnovers in 12 quarters, and you have the number 2 overall draft pick on the sidelines who has done nothing but look good since he entered your building back in May. And, you know, it's the fans are always going to want the shiny new toy, especially at the quarterback position. But this would be a lot different if Glennon was actually doing what the Bears signed him to do, which was to manage football games, not turn the ball over, and to buy time for Mitch Trubisky. And he's just not doing it. He has not given the Bears a chance to win in 2 out of the 4 games so far. And they have to make a change. And honestly, I think they are going to make this change before the next game against the Vikings.
Will the change be to Trubisky?
Well, it's funny you asked me that question, because there was like a part of my mind this morning that was like, well, maybe the change is just going to be to Mark Sanchez if they really don't think Trubisky's not ready yet. I do think it's going to be Trubisky. I don't know how that they could even make an argument that if they take Glennon out and they don't put Trubisky in, well, then once again, the question I've been asking this entire time, and I even asked John Fox last night, why is Trubisky even the backup then?
Right.
Like, if you're that afraid to play him, why is he even active on game day?
Because, Adam, you could make an argument that last night, regardless of who the backup quarterback is, the backup quarterback should have entered that game after the atrocious performance from Mike Glennon.
Yeah, same thing in Tampa. Absolutely the same thing in Tampa. If it's not Trubisky, then Mark Sanchez should have been in both of those football games. Because what's the point of having a backup quarterback? That you need, at that point, you need somebody to spark the team, something different offensively. The quarterback is just killing you. They've been in 2. They almost beat the Falcons. They did beat the Steelers. And in the other 2 games, they didn't have a chance because the quarterback kept turning the ball over.
Yeah.
He is the problem. They can't keep blaming it on other things.
The other issue for me, and this might be one just, you know, as you get more emotional because of the rival, the Green Bay Packers, the Chicago Bears, across the board, look to be outplayed and, more importantly, outcoached. You saw this from the offensive coordinator. Tony Romo was up in the booth yesterday calling out the Bears for having Glennon in the wrong system or not playing to his strengths. The defense on the side of the ball kind of let the third-string running back and a couple of backup tackles maul them throughout the game. Special teams, once again, making strange plays. Even down to Danny Trevathan making us the dirtiest team in the NFL. It just seems like everything is going wrong for the Bears.
Yeah, I think what concerns me with the coaching is it doesn't seem to be getting better. I mean, you're still seeing the same clock errors. I mean, Fox lets 8 seconds run off at the end of the first half before calling timeout. It ended up not mattering, but it still happened, okay? And the mistakes, the penalties, they're the same mistakes. False starts, holds. These are fundamentals that at some point do fall on the coaching staff, because those are the things that should be coached out of you.
Not to mention busted coverage, the end zone. I mean,
yeah.
It seemed like every time the Packers scored a touchdown, it was easy. It was like playground.
That's been going on now for 5 years between 2 different coaching staffs, and it's incredibly frustrating because, I mean, it's one thing to just not have good enough players. It's another to not have anybody on the same page and just leave Jordy Nelson wide open multiple times, not just in this game, but it's like every time the Bears play the Packers, that happens. I mean, how does that keep happening? It's really inexcusable, and I am starting to come around on the idea that it's a coaching issue. It's not just a talent issue.
The other issue, Adam, the one that I know is emotional. Again, it's hard for me to separate the logical and the emotional. But in the fourth quarter, with about 10 minutes to play, the Chicago Bears embarked on a huge 9-minute drive where they ran the football 90% of the time. It was essentially a white flag. They're losing the game 35-7, or I think at the time might have been 28-7, whatever it might be. But the point being that even in loss, in blowout, they threw the white flag up, and there was something wrong about that. As a Bears fan, I wanted to see more, like, okay, you got your butt kicked, you got your tail slapped, you know, like, but still get up to the line and act as if you are supposed to act in the fourth quarter. The announcers on the national game were perplexed. Once again, it felt like the Bears were trying everything they possibly could to just get off the field.
Yeah, I'm still up here in Wisconsin, and I've talked to a number of Packer fans and some media members that cover the Packers, and they were asking me about that. Like, what was up with the fourth quarter? And I mean, that was a great drive that Mike Glennon had to, you know, run the clock out as if they were winning the game. I mean, it was like a great 8-minute drive. If you had the lead, that would have been perfect, but they didn't. They were getting blown out. And, you know, Hamp last night on the postgame show on WGN was you know, just, I thought his head was going to explode because it's as if the Bears quit.
Yeah.
It's as if the Bears quit. And by the way, that happened in Tampa too, when the Bears had a situation. It was fourth and two at midfield, and John Fox didn't go for it. He punted the ball. To me, that was just raising the white flag. And the same thing happened last night. You score the touchdown. I mean, they weren't going to come back, but why not try an onside kick? What do you have to lose? What do you have to lose in that situation? I don't get it. And then the just run the ball 8 out of 9 plays on that next drive instead of throwing, it was just mind-boggling.
The other issue, of course, kind of mentioned it a little bit, Danny Trevathan with the unnecessary roughness penalty, possibly fined, possibly suspended. The hit was egregious. It was one that it's a football game, and we understand players, you know, have to make plays. But it did seem like Danny Trevathan, you know, unfortunately, as a Bears fan, I've tried my best to defend it, but it's hard to look right. to make a play out of frustration that was pretty dirty. Where are we at with that? And the Washington Post had a piece today. Trevathan's name has been thrown over all the national media. Not a great look for the Bears defense.
Yeah, basically, Trevathan has kind of become the national poster child here for the NFL having to make a stand. And it's hard to disagree with. I mean, they have so many times where their player safety rules and then suspensions and fines don't really add up. They seem hypocritical. And if it's going to be as serious of an issue as it should be, and the NFL claims it is, then when a hit like that happens, you have to do something about it. Now, the thing is I cover Danny Trevathan every day. He's not a dirty player.
Right.
I don't think he's a dirty player. And I do think that comes into the equation when you figure out how to handle this. I mean, for instance, you look at that Marian Hossa hit with the Blackhawks a few years ago when Rafi Torres took him out, equally egregious. But Torres had a long, long, long history of dirty hits like that.
Right.
He was a dirty player, and the NHL had to crack down on him. And they finally did. I think it was a 25-game suspension. So I don't know that it should be to that type of level with Danny Trevathan because he doesn't have that type of history. But at some point, the hit happened. You did do it. And the NFL, I think, does need to make a stand here and at least suspend him for one, maybe two games.
Looking ahead, we get a couple Sundays free, which we may, as Bears fans, be looking to do that more often in November and December as well. But the next game will be Monday Night Football against the Minnesota Vikings. Are there any other changes? I thought it was interesting that Coach Fox, in his press conference, didn't do the same. Mike Lennon's our quarterback. He said there will be changes. We'll be looking around, changes at all different places on the team. Beyond just Mike Glennon, are there other changes you see that have to happen for this squad? Guys getting promoted, guys getting demoted?
It's interesting because Fox did say that they were going to be looking at everything. However, I think that was just him kind of deflecting and trying as much as possible to take the focus off the quarterback position. But you brought it up and you hit it perfectly right there, Justin. This is a huge change in tune compared to you know, how about 2 weeks ago when Glennon was equally as bad in Tampa and John Fox got up to the podium and said, well, he's starting against the Steelers. He said it right after the game. There was not going to be a change. So the fact that he said what he said last night, left the door open to a quarterback change, and then once again today at Halas Hall did the exact same thing, I think they're definitely contemplating the change. And if they're in the, if they're willing to talk about it, I don't know how you can rationally put an argument together that Glennon should go out there. There might, I mean, there might be a, you know, they might revolt at Soldier Field. And by the way, the Cubs have a playoff game that night at Wrigley Field. Well, we don't know if it's going to be a night or a day game, I guess, at this point. But the Cubs have a home game in the playoffs that day. I mean, no one's going to even come to the game. I mean, some people will show up. But if Mike Glennon's starting, it's not going to go over well. We're just at that point where it's not just from an optics PR standpoint. It's from an also a football. You can't play Glennon anymore. He's just been that bad.
He's a nice guy, and he's a good teammate, and he puts in the work. But he's just not good. He's just not.
Adam Hoge covers the Bears for WGN Radio, WGNRadio.com/Bears to get his latest podcast, as well as great stuff both on Fox and Akeem Hicks and how long these players are going to stay with the team or stay involved with Mike Glennon as quarterback. I love talking to you, Adam. I'm sorry that this was so emotional.
I understand it. It should be.
All right. Well, have a great trip to, or you're in Wisconsin right now for the Badgers Cats game coming up here on Saturday. But Adam Hoge, thanks for joining us, bud.
Thanks, Justin.
Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
So the Chicago Bears, I hear, played at Lambeau Field last night. Now, you know, I only half pay attention to the game because I'm kind of doing some other things, but I rushed home to watch the highlights. ESPN led with the Bears Packers. I didn't realize how bad it was.
Well, and there was a one-hour delay.
Right.
There was a rain delay. And to be honest, that was the best part of the game. Because we got to stop in the middle of the night and be like, oh, well, we can do something different for an hour before this. Because it was already 14-0. You felt like it might be over. So yeah.
Well, look, you know, Herman Munster drops back in the pocket, you know, goes to throw the ball. Poing, it bounces out. Then the one that I really started laughing at was the ball that ricocheted off his shin.
Yeah.
Doing, you know, Rob, like, it was just awful.
Hoge called it out, but the real part that hurts you as a fan is in the fourth quarter when they're down and they're pretty much out and they wave the white flag. For them to spend 9 or 10 minutes on a drive where they just run the ball nine times in a row to just eat clock so they can get on a bus, really hard. That's hard to stomach. And as Hoge said, Dan Hampton had a problem with that. You and I have. Everyone has a problem with that. That's just not Chicago Bears football.
Well, but see, you guys are Bears fans. Here's my sobering thought, that the Bears beat the Steelers the Sunday before. That's where my angst comes in.
That's got to bring an extra angst.
It does.
You're grabbing your heart right now going, what's this mean for my team?
All right. There you go.
All right. Thank you, Rob. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up tonight, we're going to reload this week's news. Got the biggest story. What story is overreported, underreported? What story is the biggest? I said that already. Winners, losers. Which story took us down the rabbit hole? And which story is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15? 500 years from tonight, or this week, Amara Enya and Mario Smith will be my guests as we reload the news. It's exciting. 312-981-7200. It's a tough one. It's a lot of stories, especially today. So that's coming up. Also, hip-hop artist G Herbo will sit down. This will be, like I said, the third time he will sit down in studio with us to talk about his music. I had him one time early on, he was doing a show, and we had him a second time because I think he had dropped a mixtape, and this is his featured album. He put out a debut album, and it's getting huge, huge critical acclaim. Get a lot of credit. Congratulations to the 21-year-old Southside kid, G Herbo, who's having a lot of success with the stuff that he's put out just last week. So G Herbo will be my guest later tonight. So yeah, so the I had the awesome opportunity of being on both radio and television at the same time. I'm the Ryan Seacrest of local nighttime media. Coming up here, we're going to talk with Andy Richter. Andy Richter, of course, the longtime Late Night with Conan O'Brien. Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien and, of course, Conan, now on TBS, co-host, announcer, sidekick, writer. He's in town for the Chicago Podcast Festival, which begins next week. He's going to have a show on stage Saturday. We're going to talk with Mr. Richter. He is in the building. We're trying to find him, as it looks like we got our streams crossed a little bit here because he is parked, but we can't find him. He's in the labyrinth that is the basement of the Chicago Tribune Tower. Always good, right? So I'll vamp a little bit until he gets in studio, which should be any second. Hopefully Pete Zimmerman's on the call. He's running around the downstairs hallways trying to find him. So we will have Andy Richter coming up here. And his wife Sarah Thayer is going to join us as well. She is the podcast is called Crybabies. And Sarah does it in L.A. And when they bring it to Chicago, it's going to be Sarah and Andy. And it's a podcast that really is talking to celebrities. They have different people. Like for this, it's going to be Bill Curtis. It's going to be Tim Meadows. Lawrence Peters from the Lawrence Peters Outfit will also be there. But if you listen to the podcast, which is on Earwolf, there is a ton of great stuff and people that Sarah Thayer and company talk to, which is really great. So it's a must listen to. I listened to a couple episodes today, actually. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So we will be taking calls for the reload with Mara Enya and Mario Smith. And, of course, G Herbo coming up a little bit later. At 10 o'clock tonight, Sam Panionovich and Kevin Powell are going to bring us Preps Plus Chicago, which is the high school sports show that we have here on WGN, to give you all the updates from tonight's action on the football fields of Illinois. So we'll talk about that. That's always a great show. And, of course, Sam and Kevin take over 10 o'clock tonight for Preps Plus Chicago, which is always, like I said, got to find out what happened with the McHenry Warriors. That'll be the – I'm not sure where they're at in terms of schedules, things like that, or, you know. That kind of. All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take a break. Andy Richter is in the building, and we have found him, so he's here. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk with Andy and his wife, Sarah Thayer, who will be on the phone here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest grew up in Yorkville, performed at the I.O. and Annoyance Theaters, and has been a fixture in late-night television for decades now. Comedian Andy Richter is currently the announcer, co-host, and writer on the TBS show Conan, starring Conan O'Brien. Richter has been featured on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien, and now Conan. He's also starred in his own sitcoms and films. He's going to be performing at the Chicago Podcast Festival coming up next Saturday night at the Apollo Theater in Lincoln Park. He'll be co-hosting the podcast Crybabies with his wife, comedian Sarah Thayer. Their guests will be Bill Curtis from right here at WGN Radio, Tim Meadows, and our good buddy Lawrence Peters, the Lawrence Peters Outfit. In studio with me tonight, Mr. Andy Richter. Andy, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
It's a pleasure to meet you. And, you know, it's so fun because we have so many Chicago comedians on this program and talk about their time. And yours has been a story I followed pretty well, just being in Chicago for years. Your performances. Talk about that. Talk about the time you spent here in Chicago. You were both at I.O. and then at The Annoyance and then getting a chance to go do the Real Live Brady Bunch in New York.
You just did it. That was all of it right there.
Setting it up.
No, I started. I grew up in Yorkville, out on the East West Tollway. And I started at U of I. Ended up at Columbia College here in the city because I wanted to go to film school. Ended up acting a lot in film school because kids don't know actors. And so you end up, if you're in film school, you're going to end up acting in somebody's film. And if you're halfway decent, when the screening is over, three other kids come up and ask you, hey, I'm...
you want to be in my film?
Yeah, can I waste 8 hours of your Saturday? So I actually got a lot of kind of valuable experience that way. We're doing a fair amount of student films, and it mainly led into then, you know, working professionally in commercial production here. I was a PA. I was just telling your producer that brought me up that, like, you know, the lower Michigan, lower Wacker area, I used to know my way around, but now it's really, it's coming from Los Angeles. It's crazy down there. It's crazy that that's like.
That's a thing, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, there is like that, kind of something like that underneath.
It's easy to get lost down there.
But yeah, it's crazy. I love it. I really do. this is such a pretty town. I really am happy.
How often do you get back? I mean, how often do you find yourself?
Not enough, by my mother's calculations. It's, you know, we get stuck in our ways where it's like, why don't you come to California? I mean, you know, people come here for vacation.
Right.
So we've been lazy. We actually haven't been here. It's been probably a year and a half since we've been here. But then, you know, it's sort of, you know, it I'm coming back next weekend to do the podcast.
That's right, that's
so,
right.
Yeah, it's sort of.
Well, you know, I kind of mentioned the Real Live Brady Bunch and the annoyance in I.O., but talk about the time, because for some people who may be listening right now, they're not familiar with that show. And then and reading today your story about jumping into that show when it went to New York, it really kind of launched your career, a show by Jill Soloway from Transparent, but a show that is so iconic in Chicago. People continue to remember and recall tremendous theater show.
Yeah, because it was just such a silly thing, and it really did. I mean, the reason that it inspired the Brady Bunch movie. Like, there wouldn't have been a Brady Bunch, you know, movies if there hadn't have been the Real Life Brady Bunch here in Chicago. And the way that the Brady Bunch, there's kind of a comic aesthetic that it's nostalgic and kind of self-consciously nostalgic.
Yeah, right.
And creating kind of like where, you know, like slight anachronisms where people from 10 years ago are in, you know, they created something that inspired like comedy for a little bit, you know, and
yeah, it really did.
It started here at the Annoyance Theater on Broadway. I don't think they're there in that location anymore.
No.
And they just said, Faith and Jill, and it was my sister-in-law that was the inspiration. My wife's sister, Becky Thayer, did an amazing Marcia, and she was doing it for Faith and Jill one night just when they were out. They were sitting around hanging around, and they said, wow, we should do a show of live, you know, basically what it was, adults mimicking the Brady Bunch. And when I first heard it, I thought it sounded like the dumbest thing. I just thought, that's got to be so stupid. And then I was there the first night. I wasn't in it the first night. But I was there the first night, and I don't know that I've ever laughed as hard in a theater as I did. There was something about it. If being sort of my age, and this would have been like 1990, it just, you'd sit there and you'd realize, I know all this dialogue. Like, I remember all this dialogue. And it, that show, even now, like when you look at the Brady Bunch, because like my daughter, I have a 12-year-old, and she doesn't watch it anymore, but she used to like to watch the Brady Bunch every now and then. And it's really kind of a weird show.
I gotta go back and see that.
It's just kind of absurd. Like it's all just really fake and really stilted and...
Yeah,
you know, and the clothes
and
just
the music,
look ridiculous.
Right.
They're just people looked ridiculous at that time.
You know, it's interesting because that show went to New York. You were able to out of New York. That's where you met Robert Smigel. That's how you got into Conan O'Brien. So that show really is a connection to your career and how you took off. And for so many fledgling comedians or any up and coming comedian to read about your story and know your story about being able to get into the room to find rapport in almost the rehearsal settings and find yourself to the couch on one of the most seminal late night shows of a generation in Conan O'Brien. I mean, it's almost implausible. I mean, to think about it that a young writer from Chicago was able to make that jump like that. Do you think back on that? Like the idea that it wasn't the most traditional route to get there? Because at that time it's Ed McMahon.
You start doing this for I started doing these shows at the Annoyance Theater and Improv Olympic, and we had a group of our own called the Comedy Underground for a while, and you devote yourself to these shows. I'm not the kind of person. My first improv class, I talked to a kid sitting next to me, and this I just went because a friend of mine went to the Improv Olympic, and the classes weren't that expensive, and it sounded fun. And I wanted to, like, I wanted to perform, but I didn't want to be an actor.
Right.
And writing was too hard, so I thought, you know, this is nice. This is acting and writing all at once.
On your feet, right.
Yeah, so like with my ADD, I don't have to focus too much. You know, I can just get it over with. And there was a kid sitting next to me who was from Arizona who had moved here just to take improv classes because he wanted to be on SNL someday. And that's not me. I wasn't like, I've got to be. I liked comedy, and I watched TV comedy, and I thought about it, and I was a student of it. But I didn't have,
but you didn't have like, aspirations.
I didn't
that.
Have
right.
like ambitions. I just have always kind of been, well, this is a cool thing to do. I like doing this. Oh, I'm good at this. I like these people. Let's hang around, see what happens. And that's kind of just hanging around to see what happens is just basically what.
Well,
taking advantage.
I was
going to
say
asked to go to New York when the Brady Bunch was going to New York because the guy that was playing Mike Brady at the time. Had to stay back and work the theater. So there was a vacancy, and I went to Jill, and I said, put a wig on me. I'll go to, you know, because it was like $600 at the time. $600 a week. I was like, that was living large. So I was thrilled to, and she said, okay, yeah, great. And there was a game show that preceded it to kind of pad out the evening, and I was the announcer on the game show there. So, you know, I definitely didn't have any kind of giant game plan, but I did kind of know where the talented people were. I was open to opportunity when it happened. And I also, too, at a certain point realized it's an industry just like any other industry. It's, you know, if you want to be in sports radio, you just go hang around, you know, hang around sports radio, you either go to games and, you know, and then you just kind of make yourself useful and then indispensable in a particular industry that is like insular and seems to be hard to break into, but you push yourself in there. And if you can do it and you're good and you work hard and you're nice to be around, you'll work. You know?
My guest in studio tonight, Andy Richter, of course, the longtime co-host and announcer and writer for Conan O'Brien, all iterations of the show, which is great to think about all the different shows.
I went away for a while.
Yeah.
I got antsy and went away for a while.
If we had more time, we'd talk about that. You're in town for the Chicago Podcast Festival, which is Saturday night. And you're doing Crybabies, which is a great podcast, Earwolf podcast that your wife does. With Susan Orlean.
Yeah.
Sarah Thayer's on the line with us right now. Sarah, I don't know if you know Andy, but welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi, guys. I was just yelling at our children to put the barking dogs outside. It's a great way to start off a radio interview.
There you go. So, Sarah, you do this podcast, which is a great podcast, by the way, and I mean, what, up to 70-some-odd episodes now. Talk about what Crybabies is and talk about what you're going to be doing in Chicago.
Well, a few years ago, the comedian, writer, actor Paul Scheer, who works at Earwolf and does a podcast there called How Did This Get Made? About bad movies. Really funny, great guy.
Great,
he just thought I was funny on Twitter, and he said, I'm putting together some pop culture podcasts for Earwolf, and would you like to do one? And I said, yes. I immediately said, yes, I would like to do a podcast about what makes people cry, because it's sort of a hobby of mine, crying. I just cried at a trailer for a movie about a Mexican ranchera singer who dresses like a man and sings to women. So I'm highly suggestible about crying, and I thought it would be really interesting to interview especially comedians, but writers and actors and performers and stuff about just the pop culture ephemera that makes them cry. And it's been amazing. Oh, and Paul said, do you want to co-host? And from out of the blue, I just thought, I had recently become friends with Susan, and I thought, you know what? I'm kind of like a hillbilly from Louisiana, and she's a Harvard-educated writer. She will bring some solid breadth to this program that, you know, I'll bring the yeehaw and the tears and the hokiness, and she'll bring the really solid cultural background. And because Susan, she's one of my idols, actually, she pretty much says yes to almost everything, unless you're a creepy stalker. But she pretty much says, like, yeah, I'll do that. I mean, she has an Apple Watch. I don't even have an Apple Watch. She's very gadgety. She has all her schedules are so neat and arranged. So she said yes to me, and we started hosting it. And our first guest was Christopher Guest.
Yes.
And we just had – I was really committed to having a diverse guest list, and I think that we've accomplished that. And everybody leaves the podcast feeling like they just went to therapy. And in fact, somebody told me we should charge.
It is a great podcast. It's going to be on stage at the Apollo Theater in Lincoln Park on Saturday. But Susan is
on deadline for her book. She's writing a book about the Los Angeles Public Library. And so she can't make it.
So you found another host.
Yes, but we did the show in Chicago last year with Rick Kogan, who was fantastic.
Great, WGNs, yeah.
And great local guy, and Susan Messing. And this year they said, what about, can Andy be the guest? And I said, well, you're in luck. Susan can't make it, so Andy's going to be my co-host. And then I thought of Chicago celebrities, and one of the first people that came to mind, because I'm a voiceover, I do voiceovers, but I'm just totally enraptured by Bill Curtis. So we got in touch with Bill Curtis, and he's going to be our guest. And Tim Meadows, who's a longtime friend, SNL alum, is going to come on. And then this local honky-tonk band, very old-school country.
We've had them in a couple times, yeah. They're great.
Have you?
Yep.
I'm so excited.
Lawrence is a great guy. Great choice to have on the podcast.
Yeah,
you never said it. Lawrence Peters' outfit.
Lawrence Peters' outfit. We, Andy and I both, I have a bunch of old trucking music on vinyl. We are like weirdo old country honky tonk lovers, so that's really exciting for us. And my friend Kelly Hogan, who is from the Flat Five in Chicago, is also going to do a duet with Lawrence.
Oh, that's great!
It's going to be a
great show.
Great show.
I love Kelly. Yeah. And so, are you nervous, Andy?
No.
Well, you know what's weird is that Andy and I, we were in the Real Life Brady Bunch together, and we've done sketches and little shows here and there together, but we haven't really sat on stage. But I was thinking today, Andy, maybe we're the next, Kelly and Ryan. I think we might be able to pull it off.
Good.
Might be the next Regis and Joy.
Well, I don't want to be that. Oh. I want to be the next Kelly and Mark Consuelos. I want to be Mark Consuelos.
Okay, all right.
You be Kelly.
I want to be Kelly. So it all works out perfectly.
Yeah.
Andy, I mean,
although we are way too fat to be Mark and Kelly.
We can be the Chicago Kelly and Ryan.
We could be great. Yeah.
Louisiana, the New Orleans and Chicago Kelly and Ryan.
I don't want to give too much away to the podcast, but Andy, what makes you cry? We heard what makes Sarah cry, but...
Oh, just right off the top of my head, John Lennon's mother.
One time we were, sometimes because I have to watch movies and things that guests are bringing on the show as their crying cues, and there are things that I haven't seen before, and sometimes I'll watch them with Andy, and we watched Kenneth Turan, who is the Los Angeles Times movie critic, was on the show, and he really loved Westerns, and one of them was The Searchers. And Andy, you cried at the end of The Searchers.
Oh, yeah, how can you not?
Yeah,
but
you did.
Yeah, but I would say Pan's Labyrinth the end of Pan's Labyrinth destroyed me.
Well, the Chicago Podcast Festival is next weekend. The podcast Crybabies with Sarah Thayer and Andy Richter will be on stage at the Apollo Theater in Lincoln Park Saturday night. You can get tickets at Chicago Podcast Festival website. It's Bill Curtis, Tim Meadows, Lawrence Peters' outfit. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. And Andy, a pleasure having you here in studio.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
All right. How about that, huh? Andy Richter live in studio. And Sarah Thayer. Sarah Thayer, his wife, was the gym teacher on Strangers with Candy. And she has a career herself. I mean, it's amazing to be in Real Life Brady Bunch, to end up on Strangers with Candy. I mean, you can follow the lineage of Andy and Sarah, and as you mentioned, Susan Messing, they mentioned, who is, of course, on the show all the time. And then you mentioned Jill Soloway, who does Transparent, show Transparent and 6 Feet Under, is the woman who did Real Life Brady Bunch that brought it to New York. There is you can go back. It's like a genealogy project for Chicago comedy from Sarah and Andy, and they'll be at the podcast festival. All right. Thank you, Rob. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, it's time to reload this week's news, 312-981-7200. This is how we do it. We do biggest, winners, losers, overreported, underreported. Which stories took us down the rabbit hole, and which story is going to be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from this week? There's a lot to choose from. In studio tonight, the dynamic duo, Amara Enya and Mario Smith. Amara, longtime activist and one-time mayoral candidate. Mario Smith, who is a longtime journalist. And
rabble-rouser.
Rabble-rouser and broadcaster and poet. Yep. It was fun to have to talk Love Jones on the show. I thought about you back in the day.
Man. Ted Whitcher, it all started at Spices on Chicago and Franklin.
He was talking about Spices. Yeah,
man. It was good to see. I actually had Ted on my show, so it was real cool to be able to chit-chat with him.
News from the service centrist on Lumpen.
Yeah, man.
You do a lot of stuff at Promontory. We'll get to all that stuff coming up.
Right on.
All right, so let's get to it. 312-981-7200. All right, so big stories. A lot of weeks it's easy to pick. This week there are two that we're kind of divided on and two that obviously are important but are totally different. Mm-hmm. Amara, what do you got for biggest news story of the week?
So I had my biggest news story of the week was what is happening in Puerto Rico, both with the storms as well as the disaster relief efforts. Big development was the waiver of the Jones Act, mm-hmm. so that was a huge deal from my standpoint anyway.
That's such an interesting story because I didn't know anything about – nobody knows about the Jones Act, and nobody knows that it was waived for Houston and waived for Florida and not waived at first for Puerto Rico. But essentially this says that vessels that are not U.S. certified – can help out in the relief effort. That's essentially what when you waive the act, because the act says only U.S. certified ships can do this.
They have to be built in the U.S. and you can't accept anything that's put on a ship from a foreign country. It all has to be from the mainland.
And this was essentially to promote the merchant industry. And there's right. something to that. That's important to do. But in this case, especially when there's a disaster, that usually will get waived. But for whatever reason, for the first couple days, the U.S. stuck to their guns. And they said, no, we're not going to do it.
Yes, it took immense pressure from the public and from folks who are aware of what the Jones Act is. And those who know a bit about the history of Puerto Rico know its relationship to the United States and a lot of the policies that they have been subjected to because of their relationship to the United States. So the Jones Act is one of those things. It took a lot of public pressure for people saying, look, we need to waive it. This is a disaster of epic proportions. And finally, they did so.
Amara, I mean, I guess the elephant in the room is the response from the White House. Because the White House will come out and say, we've responded well, gave great reviews, we're doing so much. You've heard now I think it was San Juan mayor came out and said, no, this is not working for us. We're getting close to, what he said, genocide mm-hmm. territory with food and water. I mean, where are we with the fact that I don't want to say a political mishap, but has it been a difficult thing for the White House relations?
You can absolutely call it a political mishap because not 20 minutes ago, the Washington Post reported that for the first 4 days of this, well, not the first 4 days, when it initially happened, the administration was on it. And then for 4 days, Trump was golfing in New Jersey and no one talked about it. This isn't tonight's Washington Post. No one spoke about Puerto Rico at all. When he finally figured out on Monday that it was a problem because he was watching it on TV. That's when he decided, oh, I got to do something. This is clearly to me. I'm not speaking for Amara or you or anybody. For me, you're welcome. This seems to be to me his Katrina. And this is worse than Katrina.
Yeah.
And also, when you really look at the way that they rolled out for Houston, the way they rolled out for Louisiana and for Florida, and what they attempted to try to do with Puerto Rico, and then 4 days of golfing, where he was concentrating on North Korea, preparing a speech for Alabama, where he would bring the NFL to the focus when nobody was worried about the protests or the NFL too much. This is just another sign of an administration that does not have their alphabet in order,
Katrina,
if you know what I mean.
A little bit of it took time for people to recognize how bad the president at that point, George W. Bush, and his White House responded to that. I mean, we saw the terrible images at the time, people on the roofs, help me, things of that nature. But you really didn't get a sense when you look back in history now, you go, that was a terrible. I mean, is it too early to say that Puerto Rico, because of the destruction, despair, and the reaction from the White House, that this is a Katrina kind of disaster?
Well,
politically.
It might be early to tell. I don't know. And this is largely because the president seems to have been able to avoid a lot of what should be career-ending or catastrophic moves on their part. So I don't know that he'll get the level of backlash as President Bush did during Katrina. I know that his initial statements in Puerto Rico were just they were so disconnected.
A lot about debt and Wall Street.
Debt, yeah. Wall Street, infrastructure. It was just, it was as though there was no empathy there. There was no understanding. And so Puerto Rico was, to me, treated as the stepchild, which I think they have been because of the way that the United States, the relationship that they have with the United States. And I think his comments reflected that. I don't know, though, that he will suffer any long-term damage from his handling of this issue.
The other story, and we'll get to it a lot tonight, so we don't have to dwell right now, but I mean, we were kind of divided. The NFL protests, of course. I mean, it landed in every category. I mean, every category. Winners, losers, overreported, underreported. I mean, it really is something that may not be important necessarily, but it's pervasive, meaning that everybody loves to talk about it. It's a wedge issue, and it deals with the third rail race.
I think everybody should really be focusing on the sudden caring on the part of the NFLPA and the players and the owners after Donald Trump said what he said. They had a year to back Colin Kaepernick up. He has a union that really has not backed him up at all. He's a member in good standing with the NFLPA. Demoris Smith should be ashamed of himself running a union that does not protect their members. The protest, the kneeling, the standing, the kneeling, I felt like I was at Mass at St. Carthage. Stand, kneel, sit. Stand, kneel, sit. Kneel, stand, sit. Sit, stand, kneel. Why? Nobody is doing it for the original reason. Right. Nobody has paid any attention to the fact that Colin Kaepernick, not only does he not have a job, but T.J. Yates, Dan Orlovsky, Mike the Ginger Giraffe Glennon is playing in the NFL. And a man that went to a Super Bowl with a decent arm and a pretty good record on him can't get a job.
All right. Let's take a break. No. We're going to get into it. I only say all right because let's take a break to stay on time because we're going to get – I know that we're going to talk about – I want to talk about 312-981-7200. Mario Smith, Amara Enya reloading this week's news. We'll come back and we'll start with winners and losers. Stay with us. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200, if you want to get in the action. What a tremendous week for stories that involve race and racism. I mean, really, let's Amara Enya, Mario Smith in studio. But on the winners category, we're just kind of discussing as we get into it. Obviously, you could make an argument that the NFL is both winner and loser in the in the protest. I'll give them extreme credit. I'll put them in my winner category. I also have them in the losers category. But the NFL, to take an opportunity where they see an opportunity, I mean, that has just been bad publicity with Colin Kaepernick and even Donald Trump, but to take that opportunity, parlay it into locking arms, hashtags, unity, sponsors, whatever it might be, they essentially changed the narrative. Now everybody, you almost feel like they're locking arms so no one can get down on one knee. And and there's something to be said about the fact that they changed it from unity is more important than the actual issues that were being protested in the first place.
Right. Yeah, and I see that as a good thing and a bad thing. So one is that the original intent behind the protest, behind Kaepernick's protest, I think has been obscured. I think it's been conflated with disrespect for the flag, with all of these symbolic things that were not the point of why he started the protest. So we moved away from that as people started to focus on, well, who's patriotic and who's not patriotic. And so it just kind of obscured the point.
Yeah.
Then Trump, I think, presented an opportunity for the NFL to become vocal, but they became vocal in a different way. It wasn't vocal in the sense that we believe he has the right to express himself, and we also believe that people should be treated with dignity and people should not be abused by the police, etc. It became, we're going to stand together. And it's like, okay, stand together against what? When you did see some of the people who were locking arms with people who were actually vocal against Kaepernick, which to me was odd.
Yeah, and it all started, you know, even at the beginning of the week, if you think about it, and probably the most, and it isn't a comical story, there's a lot on the line with this, but the most comical part to me was the Steeler, and this was on Sunday, the Steeler offensive guard who stands by himself, and everyone rallies around this guy saying he wouldn't let the Steelers do this, that, and the other, you know, he went out, and then he comes out the next day, and he's like, nah, I just kind of got caught between the color guard and the flags. And my team, I'm sorry. I made a huge mistake. Like he's just like it was a logistical issue. I mean, that's where you're just like, what is happening here with the media and how we're all kind of going crazy.
You know what I think,
protest.
Man? I think at some point everybody needs to do a couple things. Read the flag codes because we've been blowing that. If you've got paper plates and napkins or a bikini or gloves or a hat or a scarf or a shirt with the American flag on it, you're breaking the flag code, so you're disrespecting the flag. When they present the flag at football games horizontally, it should never be presented that way. You're disrespecting the flag. If you're talking
about,
if you want to really talk about what disrespecting the flag is, those I just named.
Well,
half the coach.
Last night when they were doing the national anthem on the Packers game, they were making a big deal about it. Of course, they had to show everybody and they show all the fans. There was one guy in Green Bay who was very USA about it, and he had his hat on.
Yeah, he had a hat on.
And I'm like, I was taught at an early age, you take the hat off. So I'm like, no one, what is happening?
Nobody. I think what everybody should do right now, for real, if you really like, first of all, if you're an NFL football fan, this is the worst week of your life because none of it was about football. I haven't watched a game for a lot of different reasons. Not just Colin Kaepernick. I'm a super, I love the Chicago Bears, even though they stink. I love them. I can't bring myself to watch a product that willingly pays rapists and people who body slam their women on guns and who beat women. I can't keep watching it. I have a hard time supporting an organization that supports that, but won't support a guy who is through a peaceful protest saying there's a problem in our country. Yeah. And I'm using my platform and my celebrity to put a focus on
There's something to be said, Namara. There is something to be said that there already has been a pretty liberal movement to boycott the NFL, whether
Absolutely.
It be Colin Kaepernick or the issues involved. Yeah. And now Donald Trump has created a conservative movement to boycott the NFL. This is where I'd put them in the loser category.
It's
where
like watching
we can all get, we can all come together on this in despising the NFL.
Right. I mean, I thought it was interesting because it was a boycott of the boycott of the NFL.
Yeah.
But again, it was just the bigger issue for me was that the whole point of the protest was obscured. And so we had in Chicago a couple of incidents where you had the one with the two police officers that stood in solidarity or kneeled in solidarity with an activist. And that was it was a powerful photo that a young activist took.
And the police said, no, you can't do that.
Precisely. But then you also had that other police officer who had the American flag out, had a sign.
A well-crafted sign.
How he's proud of America. It was almost a counter-protest.
And he
to
couldn't
that
do
image.
That. Yeah. I mean, the police. I will give the police a win. I'll give the Chicago police
for
a win for consistency because they couldn't. Because the only thing that I reading today that the police officer who did the flag stuff, he says that he lost his second job. Yeah. He said he's been persecuted in certain ways. And if that's true, that's absurd. The idea that he's in uniform and says he wants to support the flag should be as respected as someone who is in uniform and doesn't want to.
I agree.
I find it so strange that someone would lose a job over a job that had nothing to do with that because of that. So I want to make that clear that no one's asking for that to happen. But in terms of being in uniform for a taxpayer job like being a Chicago Police Department, you got to be objective in political statements. Either way can happen.
Well, this is the times we live in, though. Look at who the guy's in charge. The dude that's in charge started all of this in Alabama for nothing. He had no reason to start any of this stuff.
See, I will say, you know, we've talked about, Pete and I have talked about it, too, and I've said it a couple times in this week. It's the greatest hits for him.
Oh, yeah,
He's been talking about Colin Kaepernick on the campaign. When he gets in front of an audience in Alabama and he wants to go back to campaign mode, he can't talk about Obamacare because he failed.
Yeah.
He can't talk about Hillary's lying emails because now his guys are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
He can't talk about any other issues that are tax reform. Nothing has been done.
Right.
So he goes into his bag of tricks and he pulls out something that really he has nothing to do with it, which is just, I want to throw my opinion out about something.
Right.
And so you can understand, this is a greatest hits. This is not, I mean, he does it because he knows it riles up the people that are in front of him. He's a showman.
He knows his base.
And we also know that there are two Trumps behind a microphone. There's teleprompter Trump and there's pants around my ankles Trump. Pants around my ankles Trump is going for it every time he opens his mouth. Teleprompter Trump is very much sticking to the script. He says what he has to say and then he leaves. That other guy, though, is the guy that's in Alabama talking crazy.
Yeah.
That's the guy that's saying, okay, I'm sure before this impeachment or whatever's going to happen to him happens, he'll say something about the space program.
Okay, so we've gotten our NFL stuff out. I have more to say. Here's my last point on it because I didn't get a chance to say it earlier today with Adam Hoge. Maybe because Trump loves to talk about ratings for whatever reason. He thinks that we care about ratings. You know, I saw the ratings. Nobody mm-hmm. cares about ratings. The idea that their football ratings are down might have something to do with the fact that the teams in New York, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco are all terrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're not even good. I mean, they're like they're the worst they've ever been. The Jets, mm-hmm. the Giants. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there is something to be said that the big markets in this sport are terrible. Yeah, so yeah. It's just kind of a coincidence. Mario Smith, I finally got that in. I've been waiting to say that. I give that to my brother. He brought that up to me. It's like,
good.
Ratings, of course, are down. Have you seen Mike Glennon and the Chicago Bears?
Right.
All right, we'll talk about losers coming up here on The Download. Amara Anya, Mario Smith, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Mario's a big fan, by the way.
The Velvet Fog, baby.
He loves the Velvet Fog.
Well, we convene the Mutual Admiration Club. I'm a big fan of Mario's as
Thank you. That's what I'm talking about.
312-981-7200-269 says, will our toasters and microwaves be watching to see if football fans at home are standing for the national anthem? That's next.
Lord,
and then they'll tell Trump on us.
Right,
that's what he says. Right.
Right.
so there's a lot. It's so true. You know, you have a certain point, you're not sure what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
There was, I don't know where it went. I lost it somewhere in here, but there was one. I agree with the message about the NFL protest 406 thing. I agree with the message. I just don't agree with the stage. The players are acting like kids because their parents said, don't do this. And there might be disagreement there. The idea that can people agree with the message that yes, America is right now in a place where African Americans, there's injustices against them, especially when it comes to relationships with the police, police brutality, and not have it play out this way on the stage in front of a football game.
I just think it's interesting how this effort to determine what is a proper form of protest. I mean, the whole point of protest is to disrupt. It is to call attention to a particular issue or issues and to do it in a way that makes people uncomfortable because the goal is to change the status quo. So this idea, this is a peaceful protest. It is done according to the ways that all of the people who typically like to police protest would want it to be done. And now people have so many issues with how a protest is done.
Well, Trevor Noah on The Daily Show was tremendous on this issue where he said, I guess the bottom line, it can't be Black Lives Matter. It can't be NFL protests. So I guess the bottom line is if you're black, you can't protest.
Right.
And basically, secondly, and I also heard the stat right at the beginning of the week, which I thought was really telling, that it was, I forgot the poll, and I was here on WGN, but a stat that was done at the time in 1966, with Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, there was a 60-plus disapproval rating at the time in this country for that speech, not for the civil rights movement, but for that speech in specific.
Yes.
And people were like, I don't agree with what he's saying. He shouldn't have said it. That should not be up there. And you know, history has obviously proven that otherwise, but it is interesting to think that, you know, when you're in the moment, things are a lot different than the way history is going to look at it 30
years. The March on Washington, the Selma, in Selma, all of the Rosa Parks, these things were not accepted, and people weren't welcoming these forms of protest with open arms. I think in the sanitized version of history that we have, people just assume that everyone loved Martin Luther King when he was giving his I Have a Dream speech, when the contrary was actually true. And so in this moment, of course, people are not going to like the protest because it makes them uncomfortable. But we have to be careful not to denigrate the actual protest because that's absolutely necessary for any of the change that we want.
How about if the cops stop killing my people? We won't have to protest.
Well, I mean, that's
you get what I'm saying.
I get. But
how about if we get some equality and equanimity in this bad boy?
Equanimity.
You won't have to. Yeah, you won't have to worry about people protesting. It's really, really as simple as that. If the footing was equal for everybody for real, and we could get past our own personal nonsense, none of this would be happening. And then everybody can have their season tickets and not burn their jerseys.
Well, I do agree. I mean, the NFL and. I believe it is a good platform because a lot of people watch it.
What better platform?
Yeah.
What
else are you going to do?
What do people
call a press
want?
Conference in the basement of the Illinois Center?
That's like what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What do people want us to do?
And that, there's a long history of athletes in protests. Anyway, let's move on.
We've talked about the NFL.
All right, let's talk about the loser category. Let's talk about Governor Rauner. We have him in. We have President Trump in the loser category, and not necessarily about his policies or any of the stuff that happened. But what a tough week for him. Tom Price out today. Health and Human Services. Really interesting about a guy who really had talked about. He really spent a career railing on that the government is spending too much money on health care, and we should be. He led the charge to repeal, and to find out that he's abusing taxpayer money with chartered flights and other things. That's the one we're just like, oh,
yeah.
Another bad story for him was, of course, the Affordable Care Act repeal didn't happen. This was supposed to happen this week. It didn't happen. Didn't
get enough time.
That feels like that story was a month ago, but that was at the beginning of this week. And, of course, just backlash on Puerto Rico. The other losers, though, Governor Rauner, and this is a really interesting story politically, locally. He signed the bill HB 40, a bill that essentially gives protections to women for abortions if in case the Supreme Court or the federal government ever decides to change Roe v. Wade. Right. And and also to be able to keep it on Medicare, Medicare. But that's really the crux of it. Early on this summer, the governor promised to repeal or not repeal the veto or to do a mandatory veto to conservative groups, to the Catholic Church, to others. Yesterday, he comes out in a conference and says, you know what, I'm going to sign it. People are really passionate about this. I'm going to sign it. So a win for Democrats who crafted the bill and put it through the General Assembly, but a loss for conservatives who backed their Republican governor, and they are livid.
Yeah. Upset.
Livid.
Hot.
I think so part of the issue with Rauner is that, and I think the Republicans have sort of accepted this at this point, is that he came in and he was never your traditional Republican. So he never had sort of a hardcore Republican conservative ideals that he stood upon. So now that he's in office and he's done something like this, I think this is sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, if you will, for conservatives, because they're seeing that this isn't someone who we can trust to stand up on our core values. But he never came in as a core values Republican. He always came in as a businessman that wanted to shake up Springfield.
And he's had a lot of people around him, the Illinois Policy Institute, and others that have, even in his staff, that have wanted him to go more conservative, wanted him to dig in on some of the budget stuff, and he hasn't been able to go there. A lot of conservatives want to put a primary candidate up. You saw a lot of people yesterday step up last night, this morning, today, saying, hey, I'll run. I'll, we need to do this. Is that a serious threat? I mean, Amar, you've been in Illinois politics. Is that a serious threat to be concerned if you're the governor?
I think it is a serious threat. I don't know if that's the best move for the Republicans to make at this point, especially with how the Democratic candidates have lined up. What this does is it hurts the Republican Party generally, and I think it actually creates more opportunity for the suite of gubernatorial candidates on the Democratic side to come out even stronger if he is primaried.
It's tough. I mean, you're essentially, it's politics 101.
Yeah.
And Mario, what people don't, this is a bill and a law, and now a law, but at the time, HB 40 was a bill that was crafted by Democrats to put him in this position, because this is not something that goes into effect right away and changes the lives of Illinoisans. This is something that is just if something happens down the road with the Supreme Court, we are promising as a state of Illinois to protect those rights. This is all about getting the governor on record. I mean, it is a masterful stroke of
really
political
is.
Strategy by you Mike
gotta,
Madigan and the Democrats.
You got to give the Dems credit for thinking ahead.
I'm a little annoyed by it.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like, thanks for wasting time on. And I'm not saying
right.
that the issues in it are wasting
time.
No,
absolutely.
They're important issues, but it's just sort of like, this is what we're doing in General Assembly. Do the budget.
But here's the thing, man. Yeah. They can't do the budget. So they have to, it's just like the Trump administration. They can't do Obamacare proper. So what they're going to do is go, well, we'll do tax reform. The Illinois legislature cannot do the budget. So what they'll do is everything else that might be make people happy and keep people, you know, generally interested in what's going on in the state. The bottom line is, Mayor Rauner can't win for losing. So even him signing this bill, which in effect is not a bad bill, it's not the worst thing, it's not maybe the best, but it's not the worst. He has put himself in a position where he has to be called out for that. And
darned if you do,
darned
if
you
don't.
Man. And if the Republicans are trying to find another candidate to run against him, he may be like, go ahead and do it.
He's got a ton of money.
I think
he's fine.
I think the Democratic strategy money-wise, is to, anyway. Because they know that on their side, they have the burden of being the status quo. We know we've got the Speaker of the House who's been there forever. A lot of the problems in the state have existed with the Democratic structure as it is. And so I think that they have seen their opportunity is to erode Republican support for the Republican governor, as opposed to the contrasting the Republicans versus the Democrats.
Right.
And so they're trying to erode his base of support
Do you think that works? Do you think that strategy in the long run's going
to
work?
No. I don't think so, because I think you have to, if you're on the Democratic side, you need to put forth a vision for the state of Illinois and solve some of these issues in the state of Illinois and be willing to work on those issues, as opposed to pointing to the other guy to say why that person is scary or why we should be scared of them. And I think that's a strategy that they've used at the state level and at the national level. The Democrats nationally are too busy talking about why Trump is so horrendous instead of putting forth a clear and cohesive vision for what this country could be and a strategy to get there.
But this is also part of a disturbing trend that is taking place around the country and maybe around the world, too. You've got all these multimillionaire venture capitalists running for office and winning because they got money to pay for commercials. But when they get there, they're like, ooh, this job is tough. I don't really think I want to do this. And now it's like, yeah, dude, you're the governor of Illinois. This is what you said you wanted, because we've had a track record of governors who love going to jail. Apparently the pipeline is really working. And now here you are and you're like disinterested.
Well, I wonder though, and the state of Illinois was a blue state for Hillary Clinton, but it's also a red state downstate outside of Chicago. And Chicago right now with the Democrats is, it seems very much like 2016, where I don't think that there are Chicagoans right now that think that the Democrats in General Assembly have done a good job. And so you wonder, does a conservative movement that has not necessarily taken hold here in the state of Illinois, but if a conservative candidate comes in and challenges the governor, I mean, that usually is how primaries work out. More of the conservative, more of the, I don't want to say fringe, but more of the conservative or more of the liberal voters will come out. The moderates kind of stay home. Mm-hmm. Is there a chance that a good candidate come out? And this could be the moment for Illinois conservatives.
Who?
I don't know, but you know whoever it is, I mean, they didn't see a moment 2 days ago.
No, they didn't.
Now they're in a side where they're like, this is the window. The window's open. Let's go get it.
Yeah, and to actually energize the conservative base, a true conservative base that can be contrasted sharply with the Democrats. I think that there is an opportunity there.
But doesn't that put us right back to the whole Democrat versus Republican thing, as opposed to fixing the problems of the state and working on a budget
but,
and getting this right?
If you're a conservative Republican, you voted for Governor Rauner.
Yes, you
and
did.
And you have seen a lot of the issues that you care about in this state, whether it be budgets, whether it be union, and that's another story coming up here, whether it's abortion is always on that list, social issues, not gone your way.
Yeah.
Even school.
Yeah.
I mean, it went CPS, got what they... I mean, there has been a lot of fight and a lot of hand-wringing, a lot of deadlines, past deadlines, this and the other, but not a lot of wins. Yeah. So I could see a conservative Republican. If I were a conservative Republican, I'd be like, if there was a candidate I could get behind, I might get behind it.
But that candidate has to be able to woo the people downstate, because no matter what, how horrible it gets, I don't think there's a Democrat in Chicago that votes for a Republican governor. Yeah. Unless that governor's platform is going to please the people who live in the wards that are south of here and west of here.
Yeah. Well, on the other side, I was very interested to see that Chuy Garcia came out for Chris Kennedy.
Yeah.
And Susana Mendoza came out for J.B. Pritzker, which was a given. Susana Mendoza was the chair of the reelection campaign for Rahm Emanuel.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a surprise.
Right.
I think it's a little bit of a surprise. Chuy Garcia had a couple of candidates to choose from, whether it be Chris Kennedy or Daniel Biss or Amara Pewar.
Well,
I mean, there obviously were a lot of options there for him, but he went with Chris Kennedy.
Yeah, I don't think that Biss was an option after the whole debacle with Carlos Rosa and bringing him on. And I mean, that...
It could have been an option if he would have stayed with Carlos.
If he would have stayed with Carlos, it certainly would have been an option, and Biss would have had a more viable campaign. So I think that option was taken off the table. I don't think that Pewar was an option either, just because of his standing in the race. I think that Garcia is making the calculated choice about who has the resources that could perhaps be useful in the future, and also who has a likelihood of at least getting out of the primary.
Right. You're a progressive. You've always been a progressive, Amar. Yes. You ran on that platform back when for mayor. Is Chris Kennedy a progressive? I mean, can he wear that badge? Can he take what the groundswell here in Chicago that went for Bernie Sanders, that went for progressive candidates, went for Chuy Garcia, and be able to turn that out on election day?
I think he could, but it would depend on having a clear message and the policies that he puts forth. See, right now, the policies have been a little bit obscure. You don't really know where he stands on very much except for what he's talked about with taxes, tax policy, et cetera. But he would have to come out with a very strong and clear policy agenda, progressive policy agenda that he could speak to. That could help him move into the progressive camp. Right now, no one really knows where he is on the spectrum, except that he's a Democrat.
Do we know about any of those candidates, really, though? We know one thing, they got a lot of money. Right. And I also think Chewy's endorsement of Chris Kennedy says more about Chewy than it does about Chris Kennedy.
He's not a J.B. Pritzker guy.
And he's not a Pritzker guy, but you know, you got to also remember, Chewy is really going to do this mayor thing again. And if he does, as close as he came last time, he needs every bullet he can get in his chamber to win it. Rahm Emanuel's a tough candidate to beat. Why, I don't know. But he's apparently a very tough candidate to beat.
We were talking about, I was on Week in Review tonight, we were talking about in the web special about how Natasha Kerecki and Derek Blakely and Lester Munson, everyone agreed that there has been a turnaround for Rahm Emanuel. I mean, he went from citywide, everybody saying no after Laquan McDonald and that stuff. We were like out to a guy who's now the Trump foil. And we're all like, oh, well, good.
Here's what he did, in my estimation, that made it easy for people to not forget what has happened, but to kind of just like look at him and just to continue to watch him do. He stopped talking. There was a period where he just was, I'm not talking. I don't want to talk about
right,
anything.
I don't want to talk. Yeah,
if
right,
you
right.
see me somewhere,
smart. It's smart.
When you see me, you're going to see me doing mayoral stuff. But I'm not talking about anything.
But you know what else he did? So he definitely has Trump winning, I think, was a negative thing in terms of what he wanted to do, his exit strategy from Chicago. But I also think it was a positive because it gave him someone he could contrast himself with. He has this push for immigration, sanctuary cities, all these things that he claims to care about now, which he didn't care about ten years ago. Now all of a sudden he's the biggest champion. And I think it's because he's making the calculated decision that he needs the Latino vote for whatever he wants to do afterward.
Right. Let's go back to Illinois governor, because mayor, you guys will be on again. We can talk about mayor.
Oh, thank you.
African-American vote. Marilyn Katz came on the show. I even bring this up to the candidates that come in, but Marilyn said something that stuck with me. She said, there's no way to win as a Democrat in the state of Illinois if you don't get the black vote. Like, there's just no way around it. You can do all the math you want, but if you don't have it, you don't win. J.B. Pritzker, Chris Kennedy, two rich guys from downtown, white guys who have name recognition. I've heard that the Kennedy name, because it's Bobby Kennedy's son, plays more in the African-American community than maybe a Pritzker name. But is that just I mean, who are black folk going to vote for?
Check it out. I'm going to help you.
Thank you, Murray.
Here's the deal. 9 out of 10 homes from the 70s to like maybe 85 had a picture of John F. Kennedy in their house. So everybody knows the Kennedy, Martin Luther King, you know, there's the triumvirate, and there's another one I can't think of right now. They're all, and Abraham
Harold
Lincoln,
Washington.
Or Harold Washington, Abraham Lincoln. They're all viable names in the community. Problem is with these two, everybody knows the name Pritzker because there's schools named after Pritzkers and they do great stuff in the community, charity, all that, but nobody knows them. And J.B. Pritzker, as slick as those commercials may be, it's going to be hard to make that play in South Shore.
All right, Chris Kennedy?
Nobody knows about Chris Kennedy.
But can he make the argument that he's Bobby Kennedy's son?
Yeah, but that doesn't reach now.
No?
I mean, you know what?
If this was 1983.
It would definitely reach 20 years ago, it would have reached. But now it's like, okay, so what? Are you going to use some of that Kennedy money to help us out, son? Because if you're not.
Amara, what do you think?
It's just interesting to me I agree that the black vote is absolutely essential in any election to whomever's going to win. I would just love to see it be more than a symbolic token thing. Everyone was trying to grab a black lieutenant governor for a candidate to run with. You know, okay.
It
was a free for all. Like, let's find a black woman.
Every Democrat right now has a lieutenant governor who's an African American.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And that,
we
you know, that, that is, I get it. No, but I get it, but it's also a little bit insulting because there's a tokenism aspect to it.
Oh, for sure.
And when you look at the policies that they put forth and what their vision is for the city, for the state in this case, does it speak to issues that black people would care about? Or is it just lip service and a token black person in your campaign to win people over?
It's almost like Back to the Future when Mayor Woody, he was in a soda shop and nobody knew. And then boom. That's his mayor.
You know what I'm saying? All right. Before, because we only got 2 minutes until we hit the break here. But the other loser I had was college basketball.
Oh,
and yeah. this also could be a story that, you know, just got kind of glossed over a little bit. It was a big sports story. But Rick Pitino fired in Louisville. But the FBI investigation, a criminal investigation, is into essentially pay-to-play, paying families hundreds of thousands of dollars
absolutely
to play their one and done. If you're a high school kid who knows you're going to the NBA and you want to play 1 year at a big school, to that they are giving those families money for them to come and spend their 1 year at the university. What is that? There's so much just popping off in my head about that. But it also stems to the idea that this is a huge money-making industry for colleges and universities, and yet, you know, criminal investigations call out that the thing they're not supposed to do, they're doing, because it is totally unfair. They should be getting paid.
It is past time for the NCAA to find the way to share the wealth. Those kids go there, whether it's a year or 4 years, and they make campuses like Louisville rich. If you've ever been in Louisville, Kentucky, and been past their campus, they got brand new facilities all over the highway. That's money. If I'm a family man, if I've got a son that's 7'1" that can handle the ball in the paint and got a jumper and not afraid to play some defense, and you come at me with $100,000 and I don't have any money, I'm probably going to be prone to take that money.
Quickly, Amara, should they pay athletes? Should they not pay? I mean, is this is obviously wrong, where the standard that we're in right now. But what's your take? I mean, I play the devil's advocate here. Should they not? I mean, they shouldn't.
Well,
right?
You know, it depends, because think about what sports would get paid and which ones wouldn't. So is it only football and basketball, because those are the popular sports where they would pay the athletes? What about the track athletes? What about the volleyball players?
Right.
How would you parse that out about which athletes are able to get paid and which ones don't?
I'd pay the ones that are on TV. The other one's too bad for you. You play volleyball, good.
Or maybe play basketball or football. Maybe you
good.
Figured it out, Mario. Maybe it's a percentage of at ratings and advertising that come off of TV. I don't know.
I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you off. You make sure that they all are scholarship tight, and you make sure that they all have stipends for food. They don't have to worry about getting a job. That they can eat. They can live. Yeah. That you take care of them. Is
all right.
What
let's
you do.
Already do that. They did. Yeah, and here's the thing. Let's wrap. I would also say, yeah, and they're also getting free education. So that's going to be the other side of the coin. Is you're getting a free ride at Louisville. Basket weaving to play basketball.
It's
Amara, Mario Smith. They are in studio with us. Reloading
my basket.
We'll come back. Overreported, underreported, and which stories sucked us down the rabbit hole this week? 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We are reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Mario Smith and Amara Enya in studio.
Let's go.
Hey, ready to go.
Yeah. Fired up.
847 Woo! Says, hey, you can pay the college athletes if you make them pay for their tuition. That's exactly what I was saying there at the end. 708 says, as an Orthodox Catholic, Rauner just lost my vote. If that means a Democrat wins, so be it. This is about HB 40.
More people are feeling their way than we're probably going to put a number on. I bet you.
There's something there. Said 773 says the 68 Olympics when it comes to protests and athletes.
Muhammad Ali, right. Jim Brown before he lost his mind.
Carlos,
right. Then there's a Mexico point here, and this is one I'll talk to you guys about. We'll do real quick. You know, Mario, you kind of ignited a little bit of a storm.
Don't I always?
When you said, you know, stop killing black people.
Yeah, and that would be, there
said,
you go.
And someone says, stop.
I bet they said black on black crime.
They did. You're exactly right.
Of course. You know why?
We won't have to protest shame on you. There's more blacks killed by blacks than anyone else in the country.
You know
what,
generalize
though? That all police is bad when it's really just less than 1% of police.
How about this? Go to your Google. And look up the Guardian's report of how many people in the United States got killed by police, and tell me how many of those people were white.
And also, we have to really hammer home the fact that every group, every racial or ethnic group has the higher likelihood of the violence being within that group. So you can talk about white on white crime.
I was going to say, we don't talk about white on white crime.
But Hispanic on Hispanic crime.
But I would also say that in the argument, though, is that the biggest issue, it's not a violence issue. It's an issue of taxpayer-funded police officers.
State-sanctioned actors.
State-sanctioned actors doing this in a way that these are the actual people who keep the peace.
How about the
crime?
There's
a big difference between two, I don't want to be so crass, but two gangbangers on a street corner versus a police officer and a citizen.
How about the crimes?
I get all the other stuff out of there, but that's what I mean.
How about the crimes Cookie committed against Bose back in the day? Those were crimes. Did anybody talk about that? No.
Clown crimes?
Yeah, nobody said anything about Cookie taking from Bozo.
All right.
Give me a
there
break.
There we go. Good way to wrap that up.
Stop it. Playing games.
All right, let's
me,
go
man.
To underreported. This is a, you know, you had a great one, Amara, an international story that we haven't heard much about, but an independent story. And we usually love these stories, right?
Yeah, well, usually. So I have been following I've actually been following the Kurds for years. So this is a group, it's an ethnic minority group in Iraq, in Iran, and several of other of those countries who have for decades been pushing for independence. And so finally this week, they had an independence vote. But it was done against a lot of pressure from the governments in Turkey, the governments in Iran, the governments in Iraq, to try to intimidate them from taking this
They're
vote.
They're an oppressed people. It came up in the war in Iraq that the Kurds were not, I mean, there was the Sunnis and the Shiites and the Kurds.
Yes.
And there was, they were always sort of always put off in a corner. They were given the northern part of Iraq. So they want out of, they want to be independent.
Yes.
But the actors in the Middle East, they don't want this.
They do not. So they have been marginalized, sort of like the Roma in Europe. They have been marginalized for eons. And now the governments of these countries have been really trying to intimidate. They have military personnel, I think, at the border in Iraq. The president in Turkey was very, just the language that they were using trying to intimidate to stop this vote from happening, even though it was, for all intents and purposes, a symbolic vote. But what it does is it establishes a precedent and makes the likelihood of independence all that like much more possible than it seemed in previous years. Yeah. So this is a huge, huge development.
It's a good story, and I'm reading a book right now, Wendy Perlman, political science professor at Northwestern. She's going to be on the show soon.
Nice.
About Syria. And it's really interesting to sort of play out that a lot of this is about, you know, different factions of different parts of the Middle East kind of going against each other.
Who's
a lot
in ISIS,
that,
who's not in ISIS, who it is.
And the ISIS guy came back, too. Kind of the ISIS dude came back from the Russian dead. Did you see that?
I did not see
He came out of the Russian affirmament, and he's back. ISIS is back, and ISIS so is Kim Jong-un. Are you ready for
Rocket Man?
Rocket Man.
All right, so let's keep going here. The other story that we all agreed on was underreported, which is hard, I mean, unbelievably hard to believe, is repeal and replace. Yeah. Yeah. Didn't happen, and this kind of played out in a way that if you saw the last, I was riveted. I came home this last time when they had the vote with Mitch McConnell, and I went home, watched C-SPAN 2 for the first time in my life. the ratings are through the roof. This one, I'm like, meh. I mean, but I wonder how much that plays into the lawmakers' hands as they continue this, is that there is a little bit of fatigue from citizens calling congressmen and senators about repeal and replace, that one of these is actually going to stick because people aren't paying attention.
They keep trying. They keep, you know, bless their hearts, they got to have a win somewhere because we were promised winning, like continual winning, where we would be like, please stop winning. So they go for the one thing that they can't win on continuously over and over and over again. And we had this conversation, you and I, Mr. Kaufman, where you were like, I know you're a Democrat because you want universal health care. And now I'm going to say it again. Wouldn't it have been easier for them to just say, let's rethink the parts of this bill that doesn't work? The stuff that doesn't work about Obamacare.
Well, that's what they need to do, and they're trying to do in the bipartisan way. And that's all John McCain. Senator McCain has became a liberal hero.
Basically.
But, you know, that's all he's saying. He's not saying he likes it. He would
not
saying
he hates it either, right.
He's saying, well, let's go back to the order of which we're supposed to govern in the Senate as opposed to this reconciliation.
But at some point, you're going to have to find a model that works somewhere outside of the United States and say, can this work here?
Well,
and really be strident about changing. If you're going to change it, change
it. But I challenge the Democrats on that because we had an opportunity to push for a single payer system, and we did not stand on the courage of any convictions.
Yeah.
And so what we ended up with is Obamacare, which was vulnerable to being challenged. So if we're going to talk about if we're going to be all in, then let's be all in. The Democrats could have gone all in to get the kind of healthcare system that we deserve, and they didn't.
There's something to be said about compromising with
majority party, meaning they had the votes to be able to pass the Affordable Care Act. But you are absolutely right. They could have gone for what they
wanted
at the core of, yes. of the Democratic Party, the single payer system. Yes. They didn't.
They
kind of, in a weird way, compromised themselves
exactly.
out of it. Right.
Exactly. Well, that's my
that's politics.
Right on, Senator Enya.
Amara Enya, Mario Smith in studio. All right, here, we'll take a break. Come back. We'll talk about which stories took us down the rabbit hole and which stories will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week.
Whew.
It's the Download or Reload the News. Stay with us. Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news. Some good stuff here tonight.
Pete Zimmerman's jamming.
He really is. He does all it live.
I know.
Yeah, he's got a sound. He's got an 808 drum back
he's
there.
He's got an 808 on sometimes, or a nice guitar. He's just jingle, 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 jingle.
Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. We're to the point where we talk about the stories that took us down the rabbit hole. I kind of stole your Iraqi Kurds story, Amara, but one story that I saw that I think we could talk about is a big story that's actually previewing next week, and that's that the United States Supreme Court is back in session coming up on Monday, and they have agreed the slate of cases that they have agreed to listen to or to, I don't know what the word is,
to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are pretty startling, and there are a lot of big issues in this society. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been on record saying this has the this could be the most momentous session in Supreme Court history. And the first one, Bruce and Governor Rauner has a big stake in this, is that this was the union lawsuit that was filed when he first started that went in, and he said that it is unfair that people who aren't in unions or don't want to be in unions but work a union job have to pay the fees.
Yeah.
Essentially, this is a way to cut off the head, to take resources away from unions so they can't use it for political activity and support Democratic causes, right?
Yes.
That's really what he's doing here.
Yep.
And it went to a certain point, and they said, you're the governor of Illinois. It's inappropriate for you to be on this lawsuit. It's been thrown out. But somebody picked it up, and they've been able to, by being a state worker, move it through the system, and the Supreme Court has agreed to hear this case. On paper, this issue got to the court at one point or another before, and it was a 4-4 stalemate because Scalia was gone, and it was 4-4.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore. Gorsuch starts. This will be his start, and this tips the court in conservatives' favor.
Yeah.
Will we see a 5-4 ruling on unions and dues and what they can take from union professionals?
Yes, I actually think that we will. I mean, this was the concern with this whole presidential election. It really came down to, for a lot of people, what was happening on the Supreme Court. A lot of significant cases that could change precedent in the country will be heard by this upcoming court. And Gorsuch, for all of what he talked about during his confirmation hearing, I do think he's going to end up siding with the other traditionally conservative justices. This union issue is huge. This could change the political landscape in a way that we haven't had since Citizens United several years ago.
And frankly, what's at stake, and the unions will say that, and there is something to be said. If you don't believe that it's a political mouthpiece or that any dues are used for political activity, let's just say that that's the cynics in all of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're using the money for, and you can make that argument. But just on its basis, the idea that you could benefit from collective bargaining and other rights that are afforded to you as a union shop and not be a union member and pay those dues, it seems a little unfair. And I'm taking all politics and what's the money's being used for out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just on that, as human beings, as we look at that, I'm like, yeah, if everybody comes together and that's the idea, collective bargaining, and I get you more money, Mario, and I get you more money, Amara, and we all get together, but you didn't pay in the $200 to... And you didn't pay that, right. You know, and I did, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really is getting to just the structure of unions generally. But I think the bigger concern for me is what this means for workers. I mean, there are patterns going on in companies right now where individuals who don't see the value of the union, so they don't want to pay into the union. But the very power of a union is in its people. It's in having as large a membership as possible. This is the very principle is the power of people over the power of money or the corporate interest or the CEO, so that there's some balance so that people don't get exploited. So this case would essentially gut unions. It would make it so that people, oh, well, I don't see the benefit, so they don't pay in. So then the unions weaken, fewer members, the collective bargaining declines. And then you have CEO to employee right. pay.
You can make a strong argument that this is what Governor Bruce Rauner yes. ran on and why he was voted into yes. office. I mean, you see the sort of same thing that happened in Wisconsin with Scott Walker. So yep. this is a big issue. The other one, which we haven't talked about in a while, and I think it's all cyclical, right? is religious liberty or religious freedoms, and that is up this time.
Oh,
and
yeah,
this is the
yeah.
this is the case of the cake in
the
Indiana
gay
that,
cake.
That you cannot yes you cannot you cannot you can you have the right based on your religion to not serve someone that you feel
That's
is
so ridiculous.
Immoral
That's
essentially
so, ridiculous.
So
That's
if
so ridiculous.
You're a gay lesbian LGBT community and you want to come in and have a gay wedding, you have the right as a bakery to say my religion says that I don't believe in what you're doing, I don't have to serve you.
So that
and this
up,
is at the Supreme Court.
That ends up being in their favor in the conservatives' pot as well. This
yeah.
dude is into actually to in my estimation to just undo everything that's been done. Until he dies.
Well,
so he's
at least
there.
At least they're consistent.
And they're consistent. And they're going to keep doing this.
That's
everything
what Trump
that comes
been doing.
Everything that comes up that has any inkling of being for the people, they will find a way to either water it down or dismiss it and get rid of it. So, you know, this is what America wanted. They wanted this clearly because 53% of white women said, I want Donald Trump. And Donald Trump was going to make sure that whatever Supreme Court dude was in there or woman was in there was going to definitely be a concern.
But you know what? Amara mentioned it. I mean, that's what the stakes of this election were.
Yeah.
To the victor go the spoils.
To the victor go the spoils.
Yeah. So, this was what it was less about Hillary Clinton to some. They're saying this is just going to be a huge year.
Yeah.
But that issue is one that, I mean, that also can stir a lot of unrest in this country because gays have and gays and lesbians have gotten to a point where they have the right to be married, everything. We've moved socially in that direction to have a law on the books that the court of the land says, yeah, but I don't have to as a regular citizen recognize it.
So
or I don't have to. I mean, we're back to the days of I don't like your color of your skin, so you can't get gas
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
And I don't understand that at
it's
all.
I don't either.
It's a slippery slope, but you're seeing the backlash because of marriage equality passing these are things that have happened under the Obama administration that people have been stewing about and steaming about for years. And so this is part of that backlash. So it's a reverse.
And if you thought that the first two issues were big or let me put it this way. If you thought the first two issues don't affect you, I don't really care about religious liberty. I don't really care about
eating a gay cake.
Union, yeah, gay cakes or union dues. That doesn't affect me. The third one will, and it's digital privacy.
Yep. Yes.
And it has a lot to do with whether or not corporations can use your data for other things. How are you? Is your search history yours? And no one can say this is going to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And conservatives usually side with corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot on the line for this coming up U.S. Supreme Court session.
Yeah.
I'm very interested to see what happens here, Fall. Yeah?
Same here.
There's
same
also
here.
A lot of corporations that don't want that, too. Your Googles and your Twitters. And your,
tweeters.
You know, although Twitter and Facebook got their own issues right now. But, this should be interesting. It'll be a nice lesson for everybody. So buckle up, gang. If I could do my Mike
right.
Dicker. Get ready, gang.
Get ready.
Buckle up, gang.
See that? That's your IQ, zero.
That's your IQ, buddy, zero. Get ready, gang.
Get your mouth shut.
All right. You know?
All right. We're not doing any dick.
Come on, gang.
All right. As we wrap up here, Amara Enyon, Mario Smith in studio tonight. Let's do our final category, which is which story will be remembered in history from this week, 5 years from now, 6 months from now, 10 years from now, 5,500 years. I'll be in the caves when the planet recycles and we're at a point where we're back to being caves. It'll be like, what is this hieroglyphic?
What was this
from WGN? September 26, 2017.
Right.
What do you got?
I have Puerto Rico. I think the tragedy in all of this is that there are 3.5 million Americans on that island and not one of them asked for this. I think if you have any kind of heart, I feel a way about it, you know, because I remember people in New Orleans talking about drinking plastic water, the water FEMA provided for them.
Yeah.
I remember how that felt to watch people coming from New Orleans to Chicago, literally scared to death, like just frightened about whatever their future was going to be. I will say this, too. I think part of this with the Puerto Rico story is that you've got a bunch of Puerto Ricans that are going to be coming to the mainland that are upset with Donald Trump, and they're going to turn some states around, wherever they end up, Florida, Illinois, wherever. They're going to be upset for a while.
Beyond political.
I mean, beyond the political part of that.
Stuff is just awful.
If I could just real quick, Pallets and Planes. Go to generosity.com and look at Pallets and Planes. They need satellite phones and they need people on the ground to deliver all this stuff. All the supplies are getting there, but they have no way to get them to the people. So there's that.
All right. Amara, what do you got? What story is going to be remembered?
So initially I was thinking the hieroglyphic would be Kaepernick's afro. And
yes. On a knee. Kneeling. Right, for the kneeling. Man. Stop doing man type stuff.
So I think that will be definitely remembered. That was like the image that flashed into my mind. But I also think that how the situation in Puerto Rico is handled is something that will be remembered. So we still haven't seen the full fallout from the storm and the response. So I think that's something that will be remembered. So I have to kind of put those on par. But I think the Kaepernick hieroglyphic will definitely be
a my story that everyone's going to remember is the week that Dwayne Wade left Chicago.
Bye. Peace. Be easy, bro.
We'll all be like in 500 years. Remember Dwayne Wade? He played that 1 year.
See you, man.
In Chicago, where he was just, seems okay.
I'll holler at you at a charity event, son. Be well.
Nice. He had a nice sport coat with no sleeves.
Right. Bye.
Look good.
Good luck. Have fun in Cleveland.
Mario Smith, Amara Enya, breaking down this week's news, reloading this week's news. Always a pleasure. We'll see you guys in a little bit. I mean, yeah, you got to come back.
Hey, man, as long as Chicago Blackhawk hockey is not interfering with us coming
back. We'll be back.
We should all go to a game.
Yeah, love to.
I'm with it.
All right, let's do it. All right, coming up, G Herbo is going to join us, the Chicago hip-hop artist who just released his debut album, which is, just having so much success right now. Congrats to him. We'll talk to him about his young career. He's 21 years old, and this is his debut album. I'm very excited to have him back in studio. G Herbo, my guest, coming up. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My next guest is becoming a regular here on the Download. It's always great to have Chicago hip-hop artist G Herbo back in studio.
What's up, man?
G Herbo just released his...
Always good to be here.
Always
man.
Good to see you, man. Yeah. Are we best friends now? I feel like we're best friends.
Yeah, man. I love you, my dog, bro.
G Herbo just released his debut album, Humble Beast. Herbo has dropped several mixtapes and EPs in his young career, but Humble Beast is his first album. The South Shore-born rapper comes out of the drill scene. Humble Beast not only pushes into new territory with collaborations with stars like Jeremiah and Lil Yachty, but it also continues to tell a story of gun violence that's still as present as ever in his hometown, like in this track, Red Snow.
Love. I know I rap a lot about being dead or dead broke. But my city's starving, it's the go, that's just the way it go. They stealing, robbing, living harless, never hit they target. The summer's long and winter's harsh, cause we got red snow. Red snow. Red snow. The summer's long and winter's harsh, cause we got red snow. Red snow. Red snow.
My debut album is still, I feel like it's an introduction to, you know what I'm saying, me, G Herbo, who I am, you know what I'm saying, to the world and everybody who has still been, even my fans that's been following me from day one and the people who haven't, you know what I'm saying, never heard my music before. So I'm still rapping.
I love it, man.
I introduced myself and my
When did I have you? Like two and a half years ago. And I feel like just in that time, more and more people have started to know your work. You know, you had the hit that was on GCI. They were playing in heavy rotation.
Yeah.
And even this record, to see the amount of exposure and people talking great things about it. I mean, you are right in front of our eyes becoming a star. So let's talk about that. What is the difference between the stuff you've done before, mixtapes, and you have five or six EPs?
Yeah.
What's the difference between that stuff and the debut album?
The difference is just the time we put into it, the time and the thought, just because... Like me as an artist, I don't really compare myself to my peers and nobody else that's, you know what I'm saying, doing what we doing, even though everybody like on their own scale of, you know what I'm saying, greatness. But I try to like compare my work to like the people who I look up to, you know what I'm saying, like Nas and Hov, you know. So I wanted my debut album to resemble theirs, like they debut albums.
Are you a tinkerer? You a guy that just can't let the track be done? You have to get in there and mess around with it?
Yeah, I gotta. Well, no, not really. Sometimes I won't even get out of the studio unless it's perfect. So once I lay it, I won't go back and touch it unless it's something that I gotta add to it, you know what I'm saying? But as far as the music, it's just like the difference between that and my EPs is... Literally, I always wanted, even when I was dropping mixtapes and everything, I wanted my debut album to still be genuine, like unique to me, true to me, mm-hmm. and still be an introduction of me and who I am to everybody who never heard me before.
Is that so hard to do as an artist? Because you've had such success and notoriety from your mixtapes, and, yeah. And you've had thousands and thousands of people listen to your mixtapes, and you've worked with so many different artists. To have your debut album be a reintroduction, as an artist, is that hard to explore new territory, but also at the same time make sure you're giving them the G Herbo that yeah. they know?
Well, with me, it's not. I don't look at it like pressure, like, you know what I'm saying? I don't really fall under pressure, like, in those situations. It's just really me wanting it to be, like I said, true to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Me and all my day one fans, from Lil Herb to G Herbo, everybody who know me as an artist, and still be, you know what I'm saying, an introduction to me and who I am to everybody else. So it's where I come from, where I am now, and where I want to be. So it's not hard to reintroduce, you know what I'm saying, introduce yourself, as long as you see what you're doing now and where you want to be and still know, you know what I'm saying, what it took to get there.
How much does Chicago play a factor in this record? The early stuff was all about your upbringing in South Shore. It was all about street life.
Yeah.
How much is that reflected in Humble Beast?
100%. Everything. Like, I wouldn't be the artist I am if I wasn't from Chicago or wasn't from the area that I'm from in Chicago. I wouldn't be able to talk about nothing that I'm talking about in my, you know what I'm saying, my music. So, and it's still from a growth standpoint for me growing as an artist and as a man and wanting better, you know what I'm saying, than that for myself and for everybody around mm-hmm. me too, you know what I'm saying, for the youth, even the people who I had nothing to do with, the kids who I don't know, I want better for them too, you know what I'm saying? So my music got to reflect all that. That's what Red Snow is. That's what that record
is. That's the track we heard earlier. Yeah. We talked about this last time you were in studio, but as you get older and you get more and more removed because you're spending more time on the East Coast, wherever you're at, and do you have the ability, you still have the ability to relate to kids who might be going through the same things you did on the streets of Chicago, what now, 10 years ago, five years? Do you feel like your music is relatable in that sense to that generation, new generation?
It got to still be relatable because it's going to be relatable on all aspects because I'm still talking about what I am, what I come from, and the obstacles that I had to overcome to get to where I am, and I'm still talking about where I want to be. So I feel like everybody in the streets or in school, doing whatever you're doing in life, you got to set goals for mm-hmm. yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think, honestly, it shouldn't be nobody living that don't set goals for themselves, who want better for themselves, or whether it's the next month, next year, whatever. You know what I'm saying? So for me, even growing as an artist, I'm giving them motivation to, you know what I'm saying, get to where I am. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Because I was you once upon a time.
How have you evolved as a rapper? You know, from the early days of the Kills, man.
Tremendously, man. As an artist, as a man, I evolved tremendously, just, you know what I'm saying, making sacrifices and knowing that this is not, it's not about what I want to do. I'm not selfish, you know what I'm saying? It's not about what I want to do. It's about what I got to do. So when I make decisions, I'm making decisions for not only myself, for my mama, my sister, mm-hmm. everybody who working for me, my partners. I'm making decisions for everybody. Every decision I make got to be calculated 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times.
You're an industry.
Yeah, that's the way I move, like a brand, like a business, bro. It's more than just, you know what I'm saying? I ain't going to say Herbert Wright as a person, but me, Herbert Wright as a person might make a harsh, just rational decision, might just think off impulse anything, you know what I'm saying? But I can't think like that, you know what I'm saying? Me being who I am.
When you were a kid and you were putting out mixtapes in the streets of Chicago, your goal was to be a rapper. You are now. You're in all the magazines, and here you are in front of the microphones, and album coming out that's featured heavily on Apple and iTunes. Is it what you thought it was going to be? When you think back to those days, did the young Herbert Wright think this is what it was?
I wanted it to be. I wouldn't say it's not what I thought it was going to be, because coming from Chicago, I feel like I'm blessed to have as much support in my city as I have, you know what I'm saying? Just Chicago, and I feel like other people in other cities feel like your smaller support team or smaller mm-hmm. support system is where you come from, you know what I'm saying? So to have this much support in Chicago is amazing, you know what I'm saying? So I feel like it's not what I wouldn't say thought, but it's what I always wanted it to be, you know what I'm saying? Because once upon a time, I wasn't really 100% focused into my music and my craft mm-hmm. anyway. I was focused on other things. I had other things in my life going on, you know what I'm saying? So I had to grow and evolve into the artist that I am anyway, and that's a sacrifice that I made. Like I said, making sacrifices, just leave a lot of that stuff behind and just focus on this, because that would have been a difference in me being here and not right now. You know what I'm saying?
Talking about street life and other things in your life too, because being an artist, especially the level you're at right now, is all about discipline. Yeah. When you get in the studio, how you take care of your voice, your body, you have to make sacrifices beyond just the sacrifices as being a kid. But
sacrifices all the time. I feel like, man, I'm a thinker, you know what I'm saying? So just the more you grow in life, you're going to always want to make sacrifices or just make changes, little changes, just to challenge your brain. I like to challenge my mind and just say, my mind's strong enough to do this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just stopped smoking for like a month straight. I ain't never stopped smoking since I started smoking. I just stopped to do it. You know what I'm saying? Just to probably
to challenge
elevate,
yourself, see
challenge
if you can
my
do
mind. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
To clear my mind, even though I be having a lot going on. Smoking used to be a stress reliever. You know what I'm saying? But my mind's strong enough for me to overthink whatever I got going on. You know what I'm saying? But I ain't never do it to stop permanently, but I just, you know what I'm saying, challenge myself. I try new different things, and I feel like life is about making sacrifices whenever you want to grow and do something, you know what I'm saying? Like, anybody will tell you, anybody who successful in life, especially doing music that was in the streets, as deep as in the streets as I was, will tell you, they had to make sacrifices, make changes, or they wouldn't be where they are now. There's no
coincidence. Well, you hear about that all the time, this idea that, you know, and it's funny because we had some people in studio, and Ice Cube was in studio, and he talked about the difference between what he's rapping about and living that life. He talked about reflecting it. Yeah. I lived it, and now I tell the stories. I tell the story. A lot of what your early music was a reflection of what was happening on the streets of South Side of Chicago.
Yeah.
Do you see it that way, that there has to be separation for you to be able to tell that story, that you can't live it while you're doing it?
You can't live it. Why you doing it on this level, you know what I'm saying, on the level of how I'm trying to do it and really, you know what I'm saying, change my life and everybody's life around me. You can't really live it 100% and do that. You can't do that, you know what I'm saying? As far as living it and telling about it, you can, but it's not going to go global. You're not going to be able to tell the world about it. You might be able to tell your neighborhood, or you might be able to tell your city or the people who around you that it could get to word of mouth, but
your
you're not going to be able to tell
that
on a global standpoint.
Right.
It's like, I got a real story to tell, you know what I'm saying? And it's, I feel like everybody around me should want me to tell that story, you know what I'm saying? So I feel like in certain situations, it has to be the certain person that go out and tell a story. I ain't going to lie, honestly, you might, when you leave here, I think, I don't know if my name, if it's Hebrew or something, I Google my name once on some just random, randomly just Google my name. And it means, like, it stands for Illustrious Warrior, like, literally, I Googled it. Man, I don't know what, how, but it stands for
that's you.
That's not a coincidence.
Yeah,
you know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right. I've always enjoyed your career.
And my mama ain't know that it's stood for that. That's just my father's name.
And I think about some of the stuff that's on the record, and specifically Red Snow, as you continue to talk about gun violence in Chicago. And it's something that I wonder about, the transition of being front and center on it, like it was early in your life, to where you are now, where you're almost at bird's eye view. You're at a different, you're looking at the issue of what's happening in Chicago from 1,000 feet. How does that change your perception? Does it? Do you, as a thinker, and we talked about this, do you see where you came from in a different place because you're not there anymore?
Not really, because, like, right now in Chicago, I can't think like I'm in L.A. I can't think like I'm in New York. I got to think like I'm in Chicago right now, you know what I'm saying? So I can't go too far from it. And I still got people in my life who still living that, you know what I'm saying, who's still in the streets every day on a day-to-day basis. And I try to, you know what I'm saying, everybody that's living the life that I live, you know what I'm saying, want better. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We don't want to wake up and have to think like that and do the things that we had to do or face the obstacles we got to face every day just by being in the streets, you know what I'm saying? Because when you in there, you understand it's only two results. When you in the streets, when I'm in the streets, I know it's only two results, end results to it, you know what I'm saying? But we can't help it. That's
what
just,
are the
that's
end
live
or die? Is that what you mean?
Die or go to jail. It's only two end results to being in the streets, 100%. Like how the streets is in Chicago, you know what I'm saying? It's only two ways to, if you're going to live that life for the rest of your life, it's only going to go either way. But you got to accept that. You got to understand that. When I'm in the streets, when I was in the streets, I understood that, you know what I'm saying? But it's not our fault. Those are the obstacles that we were up against, you know what I'm saying, growing up. I'm only 21. I've been doing
21 years old.
I'm only 21. I've been doing what I've been rapping for about 5 years. I've probably been literally like 100% an artist, focused on music for about a year and a half, maybe two at the most. You know what I'm saying? So me growing up in Chicago, I was 14, 15, still going to school, high school, and up against obstacles that grown men not facing. You know what I'm saying? I could have post-traumatic stress disorder, literally. I ain't never had no therapist and nobody to talk to get me through none of the things that I'm going through. I didn't lose so many of my homies, I done seen people die right in my face, you know what I'm saying? So it's not our fault that we were up against those obstacles, you know
what
I'm saying?
Do you think that affects you?
We want better for
ourselves. Does that affect you as an artist? Does it affect you as a human? All those things? I mean, you haven't seen a therapist,
right? We can't let it, you know what I'm saying? Because we might be up against that same thing tomorrow. As long as we here, we got to be strong, you know what I'm saying? I feel like nothing, in life, everything happened for a reason. So I wouldn't be up against this if I couldn't overcome it. You know what I'm saying? Like they say, God give the strongest battles to the toughest soldiers. You know what I'm saying? So me and everybody around me that's up against these obstacles, we ain't trying to do nothing but complete it. You ain't trying to do nothing but get to the other side of it. That's all we thinking about. We can't let it overtake us at all, you know?
G Herbo, my guest in studio, talking about his new album, Humble Beast, the longtime drill artist from the city of Chicago, from the South Shore. He has a thinker, and you've always, this is the third time you've been on the show, and you've talked about violence, and you've always brought a fresh perspective that we don't hear before. So I ask you again, you know, as we see more and more headlines and numbers and people dying and from gun violence in Chicago, it becomes a little bit more desensitized. I think it was even Anthony Bourdain talked about, he had a clip that was just out, something about, in Chicago, they don't even care about it. People just don't care anymore.
Yeah.
And there is this thought of it doesn't seem to be front and center. More things take the stage, you know, whether it be issues over money or finances or a city or whatever. But where do you think we are? Are we paying close attention to this, to what's happening on the south and west sides of Chicago?
No, I feel like it's been that way for some time now. You know what I'm saying? I feel like people so numb to it and they don't know how to fix it that they try to just overlook it, wishing the rest of the world will. Like, maybe if we forget about it, nobody else will know that they're killing each other over here. They just kill each other off. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what's going on. That's what I feel is going on. Everybody overlooking it because they feel like they don't know how to stop it. But really, the main thing with stopping it is getting hands-on, facing it. You know what I'm saying? In order to overcome your fears or overcome anything negative, you got to face that negativity. You know what I'm saying? So that, by me saying that, like, with me being as an artist, me hands-on, me coming from 79th and Essex, you know what I'm saying? In order to make 79th and Essex better, I got to go be hands-on with 79th and Essex. I got to go on 79th and Essex and bat my neighborhood back and get jobs to, you know what I'm saying, my homies' mothers and everybody who out there who's struggling, you know what I'm saying, and black-owned businesses, and go buy my community center that's on 76th and Phillips, and go buy that and rebuild that, and go have the kids going to youth centers. That's the camps that we used to go to when I was 12, 13, and Six Flags. They don't have that no more. They 12, 13, game banging.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. You talked about like starting.
That. So that's the only way to stop it. You know what I'm saying? You got to show people you care. You got to show them hands-on and tell them this a better, another way of thinking and living. Once you do that and people could take care of their family, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to risk my life or go out and game bang or do anything because I got to take care of my family. You know what I'm saying? And once you're able to take care of your family, that's going to be anybody mindset. You could change anybody mindset once you're able to take care of your family because it ain't nothing else like it. Whether you're a woman, female, kid, anything, once you get opportunity for people to make their life better and make the people's lives better that they care about, they not going to risk that for nothing else. So that's all you got to do. Yeah. It's that simple.
G Herbo, the great Chicago rapper who is just putting out his debut album, which is, again, it blows my mind because I've been listening to your work for years now.
Yeah.
Humble Beast, which is out now, Spotify, Apple, all the places you can stream. G Herbo, awesome to see you.
Man,
I love that
you too,
take
bro.
Time to come in here.
For
we
sure,
appreciate
always,
it.
Always, man.
And I'm glad you're my best
always,
friend, so
man.
I appreciate
for
that.
For sure, man. Appreciate you, bro. Thanks for having me.
But Malcolm came right to his senses, got down on his knees.
Damn.
The saddest thing about life, it keep revolving. Same story, different, again, same apartments. Same gutters, same group of people starving. Malcolm could have stayed in school and got a job, though. But this was all that Malcolm knew. He from Chicago. Compare contrast of Malcolm's from a rich town. His whole life was planned out since he was 6 pounds. Let me break it to a core so you can focus more. At the age he started puberty, he was smoking weed. His 8th grade graduation, he was toting heat. His freshman year of high school, he was posted. Before he saw his senior year, his life was over. Over. It's over.
It's over.
It's over. Over.
All right, that's going to do it tonight for the download. Coming up, Preps Plus Chicago. Sam Panionovich and Kevin Powell in studio to give you all the high school updates that you can handle. Big week in high school sports. We'll talk with them. Or they'll take over here at 10 o'clock. Coming up on Monday, Chef Matthias Merges will be here. Looking forward to that. Also, and this is going to be fun, the reporter Mike Resendiz, who is the reporter at the Boston Globe, who was Mark Ruffalo played in the movie Spotlight. He will be on the show.
on Monday. We'll talk about his work at the Boston Globe, reporting, investigations, and, of course, the Catholic Church, what he covered while in Boston. So we'll talk with him. Lots to go through on Monday. Good show lined up. Sam Panayanovich is here. Sam, big night for high school football?
Big night. Kevin's still in makeup. That's why he's not here. It's so big. He needed to get all dolled up. No,
amazingly, on radio, it still doesn't help.
Right. We've got some big games in the top 10. Lincoln Way East, number 1. They're at number 6, Homewood Flossmoor. Out in the west suburbs, number 7, Lions. Number 8, Glenbard West. And it's the 94th meeting tonight between Batavia and Geneva. They played for the first time in 1913.
Wow.
One of the oldest rivalries in the state.
Are we getting closer? I mean, we're obviously in the mix right now where it's pretty much rivalry time, meaning
it's the heart of conference play.
Heart of conference play. I mean, are we seeing upset? Is this going to be the time when we start to see it sort of materialize who's the cream of the crop, who's going to be playing for the titles, and who's not?
After tonight, you'll know who the best teams are in the big conferences for sure. The cream starts to rise. 14 of the top 20 are in action tonight, but that's not my favorite part of tonight's show. We're going to have the head coach of Peoria on. His name's Tim Thornton.
Mm-hmm.
All his team did, the Lions, in their last game, they scored 94 points.
What?
In a high school football game.
94 points in one game.
Were they playing the Bears?